Morning, church. It's good to see everybody here this morning. If you're visiting with us, we've been going through the book of Matthew so far, but as you go through the book of Matthew and you start to read all those births, the birth story and the virgin birth, and there's some details that Matthew doesn't go into that, you know, another version, another gospel has, the Gospel of Luke. And sometimes it does well to look at the other gospel, to see how they do things, to see how God's inspired word works that way. So this morning we're going to be in Luke. We're going to pause being in Matthew, and we're actually never going to move from there, from Luke 1. So if you've got your Bibles or your iPad or something, we're just going to be right there. I've looked at this story a million times in Luke, and I know you have too. And this week, as I was reading it, there was something that I saw that I've never seen before. This happens every once in a while. Is this ready to go? I hope. There we go. So I thought what I would do is share that with you. And there are times you read something or you see something or you watch something a billion times and you think you know the whole story, and then you see something that you've never seen before. This happened to me actually this year at Christmas. There's a movie that comes on every year, The Christmas Story. I know we've all, anybody never seen this movie ever in your life? My two kids, how did that happen? And Bob, my three kids and Bob. Wow, okay, I didn't see that coming. All right, so how did we did that? I don't know, but before this movie came on every Christmas, and I think it plays for 24 hours on TBS, so you can... This is on one channel, and the Chevy Chase Christmas is on the other one. But before they did that, I used to have the VHS, and we didn't have cable. So I watched this movie a billion times, even as a kid. So it's hard for me not to be able to quote every line and say every word of this movie. But this past year, I actually saw something I had never seen before in this movie. And it was just a little piece. But the little piece kind of changed... It changed it for me. So those of you who know this, you know what this movie's about, okay? It's about this 9-year-old boy named Ralphie. And for Christmas, anybody remember what he wants? Not just a BB gun, but a Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle. And every time he makes his case, he goes to each person trying to make his case. So he goes to his mom. And he thinks he's got it. And so he makes this case of an air rifle and why every young boy should have it. And he makes his case, you remember, to his teacher. He writes the whole report about what he wants for Christmas. And he even makes the case to Santa Claus. And every time, what do they always tell him? Shoot your eye out. Yeah. So he really wants this. It's what he wants most in life. And every time he thinks he's going to get it, or every time he thinks, you know, this is the person who can give it to me, it's a big letdown. And here's the part that I never noticed before. When Christmas morning arrives, you know, Ralphie and his brother, they get up and they run downstairs and they dive into their presents and they're opening socks. And you remember the pink bunny costume that he opens, and they open everything, and Ralphie and his mom and his dad are sitting on the couch, and his brother is asleep on the floor, and his mom looks over at Ralphie and she ruffles his hair, and she says, "Did you have a nice Christmas?" And Ralphie looks at her and he says, "Pretty nice," but we know this is horrible because he didn't get the gun. You know, he didn't get the rifle. But here's this kid who didn't get what he wanted, 9 years old, and he looks to his mom and he says, "Yeah, it was pretty nice." And then his dad says, "Did you get everything you wanted?" And Ralphie said, "Almost." And I never noticed it before, but I probably because this generation, and I say this generation, I guess I'm included in that. You know, this generation, we are quick to say what we didn't get. We're quick to say what we wish we had, and we're slow to make the best of the worst situations. Y'all notice that? And it's not just my generation. It's this generation of people living right now. We're quick to say what we didn't get, and we're quick to note how things could have gone better. But in this movie, I don't even remember when this movie was, you know, put out. But in this movie, at a time that was a little different than ours, even reflecting the 1940s, even another time different than ours, this little piece reminded me of how we should be, of these little moments when life doesn't go how we thought it would go. Now, of course, we know the movie's not over, and we'll get to that in just a minute. I guess when we get to that part, you know we're over. The sermon's done. Okay, so when we get to that part. But I guess it's this. Sometimes, at least for me, it's really hard to put on a smile, especially when I didn't get what I wanted. It's really hard to put on a smile when things don't go my way. And here's when the hardest time it is for me to smile. When I realize I am never going to get what I wanted. When I realize it is never going to happen the way I wanted it to happen. And if you're anything like me, you've been there. It's really hard to smile when you know nothing's going to change. You ever taken an experimental drug because you thought it would be the cure that you hoped it would be, and it turned out it wasn't? And then they try to sign you up for another one. Isn't your hope just a little diminished from the last time? Or how about you're in a relationship, and you really want this relationship to work, but every other relationship you've ever been in tanked. Do you have any hope for this one? It's really hard to smile when everybody looks at you and says, you're going to shoot your eye out. It won't work. You can't do it. And I think we can find ways to keep our heads up and to hope. And this morning's story is this little bitty story about Zechariah, this really old man. And I'm not calling him old because, you know, y'all heard that he's old. Like what does it say? Oh, he's well on in years. Okay, that's a good way of saying old. That's just how the NIV or the King, they're both, him and his wife, they are well on in years. So they're elderly, they're past their prime. I don't know, how do we say this? They're old. Okay, I'm just using somebody who just said, okay, so they're old. All Zechariah ever wanted to do was serve God, and you know that just from looking at the text. All this guy ever wants to do is serve God. He's an upright man. My Bible has that he's righteous. But Zechariah is upright, and he lives in a little bitty rural town. So he lives in the country. You know, last week we talked about Buck Snort. So he's in one of those. You know, he's in one of those, you know, Centerville kind of Mayberry places. And he's in charge of doing that. And let me kind of give you some background here. Look in your text. It says, once when Zechariah's division was on duty. So Zechariah, you imagine this. Imagine we've got a church in every little district, okay? And they need a minister at each little district. In Chronicles 24, we have this. You don't have to turn there. I told you we'd stay in Luke, so just stay there. In Chronicles 24, the kingdom is divided up, and they make sure there's 24 divisions of priests. And they're in 24 districts. So you know we all got districts in Tennessee, so there's 24 districts in Israel, and each district needs a priesthood. Y'all ever been to these podunk towns, and you see this little bitty church, and you think there's probably 8 people there? Well, they still need somebody to preach. You know, somebody's still got to get up. Somebody's still got to do that. In every little district, you need a priest. You need a family of priests. And Zechariah is of, you heard Brent say it, he's from the family of Abijah. Now, I put this chart up here so that I look smart. I know you can't see it. It doesn't matter. You don't have to know the chart to go to heaven. It's okay. But there's 24 divisions, and here's how this works. Each set of priests, you got to work in your hometown. So Buck Snort has theirs over here, and then, I don't know, Shelby County has theirs over here. Twice a year, your family in Buck Snort or Memphis, your priesthood has to shut it down and go to Jerusalem to work. So somebody's got to work the mother church, right? So twice a year, we got 24 divisions. So for 48 weeks, we've got it taken care of. So this week it'll be Shelby County, and the next week it'll be Robertson County, and the next week it'll be Wilson County. And well, this is, I don't know, what's an eastern county that's, I don't know, has no people? Some of you are afraid to say it. I don't know. I got Trousdale's next to me. I don't know how many people's in Trousdale County. 8. So, you know, he's from this. Sorry for anybody who lives in Trousdale. So Zechariah, if you look in your Bible, look at that text. This is the week that Zechariah has to go work the mother church, all right? So he only gets to do it twice a year. Now, I want you to imagine this. If you're a kid and you're growing up in the priesthood, it's got to be the highlight of your childhood when you get to leave and you get to travel and you get to go down there. When we lived in Louisiana, I lived in Upper Louisiana, Monroe, Louisiana. I know the Omies know what I'm talking about, Paul Omi. And if you've never been to Monroe, Louisiana, you didn't miss anything. It's just Arkansas. I mean, it's not, you know, I guess technically it's part of Louisiana, but it's there. But my dad would go preach and he would go south. Or he would have a conference and he would go to Baton Rouge. Or he would go to New Orleans. That was the highlight, you know. We didn't go during Mardi Gras. I don't know why, but we just didn't go. So, but he would go down there. And to me, it was just this new sight. You get to see all of these new things. And to Zechariah growing up, you know it's excitement. You get to go to the mother church at least twice a year. And your family gets to, you know, do the preaching. Your family gets to do that. I'm not sure if Zechariah started to hate going. I'm not sure if he started to be disappointed in going. But after a while, I have to believe that Zechariah grew tired of going. And I want to tell you why. Every year I go to a convention. It doesn't matter what it's called, but it's somewhere else in the United States. Every year I go, this year it was in, I forgot already. It was in Boston, yeah, so it was cold. That's why I didn't remember it, because it was cold and I'm still cranky. But I went to Boston, and I see the same people every year. You know, I see the people I went to school with. I see old teachers. I see old professors. I see these authors that, you know, I think are the great thing. And I got there, and I've seen everybody I want to see, except for a professor that I've seen every year. And he's getting older. And I'm looking around for him, and I finally just sent him a text. And I said, "Hey, I'm here. Are you here?" And I didn't get a response. So the next morning I said, "Are you here? Let's meet for coffee." He sent me a 5-word response. "Not there, I'm too old." That's all he said. "Not there, I'm too old." So I called him. I said, "Hey, are you not here in the hotel or are you not here in Boston?" He said, "I'm not in Boston at all." And I said, "Have you been every year?" He said, "I've been every year for 55 years. And that's when I'm doing the math, like, how old are you? 55? Sheesh. You know, he probably didn't start coming until he was 20-something. You know, I'm just doing the math. And I said, "Well, but why did you stop coming?" He said, "I told you, I'm old." I said, "Well, that's not a reason." And he said, "You're not old." And I said, "It's just a plane ride." And he said, "Adam, when you're as old as I am, getting on the plane is not as easy as it is when you're 22. And I said, "Well, I'm not 22. He said, "Well, anytime between 22 and 55... it's the same thing." He said, "After 55, it gets a little harder." He said, "When you get to be 70 years old and you get on the plane, you start to worry that maybe you won't land in an hour and 15 minutes and you may have to go to the bathroom." He said, "It's the little things that cause you anxiety." He said, "I was staying up late worrying about the plane ride and I just thought, I'm too old for this." And he said, "I think I'm done going and I think we'll just pass it on." I'm not, you know, the Bible doesn't say Zechariah felt like this. The Bible does tell us Zechariah is well past his prime. And I got to tell you, getting on a plane and flying to Boston is nothing like getting on a donkey and riding from a rural rocky town into Jerusalem to work for a week and then to ride back. That's not the only reason I think he got tired. There's something else, and this is the piece that I've missed every year. There's something else in this text that tells us something different. If you go to the temple, if you look in the temple, Jaheim, can you back it up one slide? Yeah, if you look here in the temple has 4 sections, all right? So if you go to the mother church, it's got 4 sections. You got the outside, which is more like a marketplace. You know, when Jesus turns over the tables, it's like a bazaar, okay? So there's the outside where we sell stuff, we change money. It's just, you know, you got to buy your bulls and your cows and your doves. You got to buy it somewhere, and you buy it in the market. Okay, you go inside the walls, and you have the inner courts. And ladies, that's where you can go. That's where some Gentiles can go. That's where we kind of let anybody go. You've got your own rooms. However, when you get to the temple part, okay, when you get here, there's the holy place. We all remember our VBS stories? Okay, there's the holy place, and then there's the... Let's try it again. Okay, so there's the holy place. It's not hard. And then there's the most. The most, thank you. The most holy place. All right. only one person may enter the most holy place. And how many times can he enter there a year? One time. Yeah, one time. You kind of have to wonder who vacuumed, you know, who dusted, but, you know, I didn't ask those questions. But one time a year, one person may enter the most holy place. It is the high priest, and he goes in there, and inside the most holy place is the Ark of the Covenant. But here in the holy place, there are three pieces of furniture. There's the menorah, so you've got the candles. You've got the table with the bread on it. And then you've got this altar, a point like y'all are looking that way, but there's, got to do like weatherman, find my direction here. You got the altar of incense. And the priest would go in there and take the incense and he would spread it along the coals. And every time he would do that, he would offer a prayer for the entire nation. And as the smoke rose up to the heavens, our prayers rose up to the heavens. Okay, that's kind of the symbolism. All right. Here's what I missed. When your family got called down and you got to serve your week a year, they chose by lot, which means they rolled some dice. Okay? They chose by lot one member of the family to serve as the priest in the holy place. And this honor could only be held once in a lifetime. So, if you're 16 years old and you're a priest, you're up. Imagine if you're 77 years old, or 65 years old, or 70 years old, or 80 years old, or 90 years old. How many times have you been to Jerusalem and you have been passed over for this role? Every year you go down there, you think it's going to be your year. And every year, some younger guy gets the role. Some other person gets the role. And I know this is what's happened to Zechariah because it's in the text that Brent read. It's right there in the text. Look at the line. Zechariah was chosen by lot according to the custom. Every year he goes down. Every year this man goes there. And every year it's the same thing. Every year it's the same thing. Somebody else gets chosen. You go in there, and I think the custom was you go in there and you take off your hat and they put some mark. You remember that old game where, I don't know if y'all ever played this, but I'm not saying I have. I've heard this is how it's played. But you remember they have the three cups and there's a ball on underneath one of the cups? Now some of you are, okay. And you have to kind of see which one it is. All right, so everybody puts their hats in and we've got a little marker and we put it in there and it just kind of slides everywhere and all of a sudden whoever's hat it's under, that's the person that God has chosen to serve in this role. And you go in there twice a day, the morning prayer and the evening prayer. And this is the greatest honor of any priest. And every year, Zechariah doesn't get chosen. You kind of have to wonder if Zechariah starts to think, is there something wrong with me? Does God just not like me? Am I not righteous enough? Have I not done enough? Y'all ever felt like that? You know, what did I ever do? Sounds like Job, doesn't it? But this year, Zechariah gets chosen. This year. I've got a friend who's been, her father was up for parole three times in jail. The first time, he's out now. The third time's a charm, he says. But he was up for parole, and he said, the first time I ever went up for parole, I've been in jail for 7 years. And I just knew I was getting out. Because he said, I thought I was old. So I went to jail when I was 22. And when I'm 29, I think, man, I'm an old man. And they got to let me out now. I've been good. And he goes in there and he gives him this whole speech about how he's changed. Y'all ever seen it on TV? You know, I'm a changed man and I'm totally different now. And he gave him this whole speech. And the parole board looked at him and they said, we don't think that you've changed enough. We don't think you've actually can contribute to society. And so parole's denied. He said, 10 years later. He's 29, he's 39. He said, Adam, when you feel old at 29, you really feel old at 39. He's up again. And he gives this whole spiel about how he's changed and everything is better now. And he wants to and he wants to contribute to society. And they come back, and now it's a new set of people, and they've never met him before. And he said they had such a look of disgust on their faces, as if they touched me, they'd get criminal on them or something. Parole denied. 20 years later. Well, 60 years old. He said, when you feel old at 29, you feel ancient at 60. He said, during that 20 years, people would go up for parole, and I'd give them all this advice. Here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to do. And here's what you got to do. And he said, after about 10 years, I thought, I am really not qualified to be given advice. I've flunked twice. And he finally said, you know what? Don't listen to me, because I'm never going to be released. I'm going to be in here the rest of my life. He said, the last time I went in there, I got in, I sat down, and they actually asked, are you a changed man? And he said, I looked at him, and I said, I don't know. He said, I thought I was, but every time I think I am, I'm obviously not, and I'm stuck in here. He said, at this point, I don't know how to live out there. And so, it's up to you. You can let me go, I can stay here. Either way, I'm going to die old, and I'm not going to contribute anything. Guess what? They let him go. And he's out. And he's trying to figure out how to live outside this box that he's been in. But when he's talking to me, I noticed that after so many years, you just give up. It's never going to change. They're never going to change their mind. God's never going to notice me. This is never going to happen. And again, I don't want to sit up here and tell you this is what Zechariah felt, but I know year after year after year after year of feeling like you'll never be chosen, you'll never get this promotion, you're never going to be accepted, it's never going to work, nothing's ever going to change. If you're anything like me, I'm this close to saying, just forget it. Just forget it. You know, if you turn on the TV, I don't think any of us do that anymore. You know, if you turned on your homepage recently, can we get one day without nonsense? Can I get one day without some parent killing their child? Can I just get one? I'd be happy with one. Can I get one day without everything being about one politician? I just want one. It's the same thing. You're not going to change anything. Why vote? You won't change anything. Y'all heard these before? It's the same year after year, day after day, hour after hour. Nothing's going to change. It's interesting that when Zechariah gets chosen, they always write the name of the priest on the curtain, and they hang the curtain on the outside in the bazaar part. They hang it up. And I learned this year. They don't write your name as we see it. They write your Hebrew name. So it's not Zechariah. It's Zechariah. They write the meaning of your name. And the meaning of Zechariah's name is, the Lord remembers. And I find it interesting that year after year after year of never being chosen, this year, the Lord remembers. And he chooses this man to serve in the highest honor. It's easy to think you've been forgotten. And I'll tell you, I'm with you. It's easy. It's easy to think that nobody's looking. It's easy to think that nothing's going to change. It's easy to become discouraged, and it's easy to give up. But I want you to notice another word that Brent read. At the beginning of the story in Luke 1, look at verse 6. Some of your Bibles may say both of them, this is Zechariah and Elizabeth, both of them were upright in the sight of God. But the word there is righteous. Both people were righteous. Here's what I think righteous means. Being righteous does not mean that you won't be disappointed. Being righteous does not mean that you won't go year after year after year without moving an inch. And being righteous doesn't mean you won't feel like giving up. I can't stand when people say, you know, where's your faith? You can still have faith, church, and be on the fence. Being righteous doesn't mean you don't have doubts. Let me tell you what being righteous means. If Zechariah is righteous, and he just now got chosen, then here's what righteous means. Righteousness means that no matter how we feel, no matter what it looks like, we hold our heads high. We do what we've been called to do, and we make the best of what we've been given. That's what being righteous means. Being righteous doesn't mean you're perfect. Doesn't mean you're not going to have bad times. It doesn't mean that doesn't mean you're going to be paroled. And it doesn't mean that that drug that you've been trying to take, that you're in, you've waited 6 months to get in this the trial period, right? You were chosen. Being righteous doesn't mean that that's going to work. What being righteous does mean is that no matter what happens, we hold our heads high and we make the best of what we be. Did you notice Zachariah is still making the trip? Do you really think he thinks he's going to get chosen this year? If it's like every other year? If I hadn't been chosen by now, probably never going to be chosen. Let me tell you something. If you hadn't been promoted by the time you're 75, it probably ain't happening. It's just not happening. I had a police officer giving a speech, and he's with the NSA. And they had somebody else there with Homeland Security. So I'm listening to him talk, and their jobs sound so cool. They're talking about kicking in a door. You know, it sounds like an episode of Cops. You know, they're kicking in a door. They're dragging people out of their beds. They're throwing them in the cars. It sounds like a cartoon. And I'm thinking, I want to do this job. You know, I mean, I love y'all and everything, but kicking in doors sounds fun. You get to be the, I don't know. It just sounds a lot more fun than what I'm doing right now. You know, sorry, I don't mean to like be honest. I'm just saying it did. You can't, I mean, it does to you too, right? All right. So afterwards, I go up to him. I'm all excited. And I said, hey, what do you got to do? I got a PhD. What more do I got to do that? And he said, well, we don't make a lot of money. And I said, I'm with you. It's not like I do either. So it's cool. What do we need to do? And he said, well, how old are you? I said, I'm 37. He said, oh. And I said, what does ooh mean? He said, we stopped taking people after 37. I said, why? And he said, well, because by definition, you're old. I said, hey, no offense. I know a lot of old people, and I ain't them. He said, well, here's the deal. You got to put in 20 years, and we put in mandatory retirement. He said, we're not going to let you work till you're 65 and 70 years old, because then we got to cover you with health insurance, and we don't want to do that. He said, so 37's it, man, because after 57, you know. And I thought, what does that mean? You know, I'm not going to ask everybody to raise their hands in here who's over 57. But what he just said was after 57, you know, you're on your own. You know, if it didn't happen by the time you're 37, it sure ain't going to happen by the time you're 57. Now, I'm 37, and I just got that from a couple of cops, and I felt a little slighted. And if I feel slighted, I know some of you have been slighted too. I know people have looked at you and thought, no, it's too old. No, it's not going to work anymore. No, you're past the prime. Nope, we're not going to do that. Nope. Not this time, not anymore. And you've come to the realization you're never, ever going to do it ever again, or you're never going to do it in the first place. And I got to tell you, it's really hard to smile when you know it's not going to happen. But if we're righteous, it means that we live as if we believe it will. So I live like I believe I could still work for the NSA. That's how I'm going to practice righteousness. Because with God, the story's never over until God says it's over. When Ralphie's mother says, did you have a nice Christmas? And he says, yeah, pretty nice. He decided he would make the best of the worst situation. And he decided that no matter, even though he didn't get what he wanted, he's going to hold his head up, and he's going to make the best. And his dad says, did you get everything you wanted? And Ralphie says, well, almost. And his dad says, well, maybe next Christmas. And Ralphie says, yeah, maybe next Christmas. If you've seen the movie for the first time, you think, ah, oh, man. But we all know that movie's not over, right? In a moment of parental grace, the one character we thought was never paying attention the father says, "Hey, that's funny. What's that behind the desk?" And Ralphie says, "What are you talking about?" He says, there's another gift behind the desk. And Ralphie goes over there and pulls out this box. And the mom, who's oblivious, says, "Honey, what did we put behind the desk?" And the dad says, "I don't know. Santa Claus probably put it back there. I don't know." You know, the dad in the whole movie, he's yelling at the Bumpus' dogs. He's trying to get the turkey. I'm not going to talk about the lamp. You know, this character who you never think will ever do anything in the end. I don't know if y'all have ever noticed this about the movie. The boy is so excited about opening his gift, but who is more excited than the boy? The father, the dad. You know, he's trying to load the gun, and the dad's just, you know, he has his fingers out, and the mom's trying to talk to him, and the dad's trying to hush mom. You know, this is the moment. And he gave it to him, and he wants to see him having what he's always wanted. You notice I said in the moment of parental grace. Church, our calling is to be righteous. Our calling, no matter what happens, is to never give up. It's to hold our head high and make the best of every situation, no matter what. And so from this little detail this morning, here's the invitation. If you feel like you've been forgotten, if you feel like this treatment or this pill or this relationship or this church or this friend or this week or this job, it's going to be like every other one I've ever had. I just get older and it just keeps happening and it just keeps happening and it's going to be the same thing. They always tell me the same thing to shoot your eye out. Nobody believes. Nobody wants to have anything to do with me. Nobody's going to give me what I've asked. Nobody truly understands me. Church, if you are there right now, don't give up just yet. Your father may just have one more gift to give. And you have to hold on. Let's hold our heads high as we stand and sing.